This meeting of the Board of Environmental Protection is being held by a conference call on April 16th, 2020, beginning at 9 a.m. I want to thank everyone for accommodating the modification from our usual procedures to enable this meeting to happen remotely today. I am Robert Duchesne, board member and the presiding officer for the board's consideration of Nordic Aqua Farms applications for a land-based Atlantic salmon aquaculture facility proposed for Belfast and Northport. In addition to myself, board members James Parker, Robert Sanford, and Steve Pelletier will be participating in today's meeting. Board members Susan Lessard, Mark Dubois, and Mark Draper are recused from some portions of the Nordic proceeding pursuant to 38 MRS Section 341C8, and therefore are not participating in today's meeting. Now, before I continue, did anyone have any difficulty hearing me?
No.
Good. Okay, good. At this time, I would like board members on this call to introduce themselves, beginning with Mr. Parker.
Jim Parker. I'm from Visa, but now I'm staying down.
Okay, Mr. Parker, that was a little bit garbled, so make sure the phone is near you. Mr. Sanford.
Hi, this is Rob Sanford from Gorham, Maine.
All right, and Mr. Pelletier, introduce yourself.
Hi, good morning all. Steve Pelletier from Topsom, Maine.
The board's executive analyst, Cindy Bertacci, is present, as is the board's administrative assistant, Ruth Ann Burke. The commissioner of the DEP, Jerry Reed, is also present. The department staff present are Kevin Martin, Nick Livesey, and some of these members may be joining us later, but here's who is expected to be here and who's on the call. Kevin Martin, Nick Livesey, Beth Callahan, Don Hullowell, Greg Wood, Ryan Kavanaugh, Kevin Ostrowski, and Patrick Sherman. Advising the board of this meeting are Assistant Attorney General Peggy Bensinger and Laura Jensen. Other parties to this proceeding that are on the call, please introduce yourselves, beginning with the counsel for Nordic, if you would please.
Good morning, this is Joanna Taranjo.
Oh, it is Joanna.
And good morning, this is David Callen as well. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. And counsel for interveners may be Grace Lobstering representatives.
Yes, this is Kim Irvin-Tucker, and I'm here for the interveners, Maybe and Grace, and the Maine Lobster Union, as well as Wayne Canning and David Black.
Thank you. And if we could have counsel or a single representative for the other interveners, anyone who wishes to announce themselves and introduce.
David Perkins for Upstream Watch.
Okay. All right, other persons on the call, including members of the public, do not need to introduce themselves, so thank you very much for the introductions. This meeting is being conducted by conference call due to the COVID-19 public health emergency, as authorized by Public Law 2019, Chapter 617. We're making an audio recording of the meeting. Notice of the meeting and meeting materials are posted on the board's webpage. The matters before the board this morning are MGL's motions of February 14th and February 18th, 2020, requesting that the board return Nordic's applications for lack of title, right, or interest, or in the alternative, hold an adjudicatory hearing on Nordic's TRI. At the conclusion of this agenda item, the board will turn to two other agenda items, voting in the minutes of the March 5th board meeting, and a request to change the public hearing on chapters 156 and 158. Amendments to the REGI rules from a public hearing to a 30-day written comment period. Moving to consideration of the Nordic agenda item at this time, I want to emphasize that the board is hearing oral arguments on MGL's motions. This is not an opportunity to enter new evidence into the record. The record is closed in this matter, and today is for oral argument only. The board will first hear oral arguments from MGL's representative. Nordic will then have an opportunity to respond. Comment from other interveners is at my discretion. Members of the public are welcome to attend this meeting by listening, but will not be allowed to participate in the oral arguments or the motion. MGL and Nordic have approximately 20 minutes each to summarize their respective arguments. I will allow a brief opportunity for rebuttal. Objections during oral argument are generally discouraged. If an objection is absolutely necessary, I ask that the parties participating in oral argument wait until the end of the other party's presentation to raise the objection. Any disputes as to facts or characterization of the record are not grounds for objection and should be addressed during rebuttal. Parties are reminded that all communication should be respectful and professional in tone and content. Following each presentation, I will invite members, questions from board members and then the staff. Board members and parties have received paper copies of the board packet for this meeting. The packet is also posted on the board's webpage. Packet pages are numbered sequentially. To aid one another and to ensure an accurate record, speakers are asked to identify themselves each time they speak. Please use the board packet page numbers when referring to special specific exhibits. Although I have allocated 20 minutes for presentations, please do not rush. When referring to an exhibit, give board members and others an opportunity to find the reference document, and I'm going to be very lenient with the time under these circumstances. I ask that everyone except me and the person speaking at any given time keep their phones muted. That means there will be a delay sometimes when people unmute in order to speak, so we'll try to honor those pauses, and if I somehow miss something, please feel free to interrupt for that reason. To make this work smoothly, please do not interrupt the speaker. If you must ask a question, please wait until the speaker is finished and alert me by saying, Mr. Presiding Officer, and state your name. To ensure that the recording reflects who is speaking, this request applies to board members and staff as well as all of the parties. Are there any questions before we begin? Okay, I hear no questions. I do hear a chipmunk chirping.
Okay. I thought it was
crooked. Okay. So at this time, I'd like to go to Ms. Bensiger. Before we begin our argument, I'd like to invite Ms. Bensiger to give the board a brief overview of the provisions of Chapter 2 pertaining to TRI and the possible procedural outcomes of the different actions the board might make in the motions before us today. So, Ms. Bensiger.
And if I could just reiterate the presiding officer's request that everyone mute their phones. I'll let you know we can hear some laughing and side conversations and phones ringing, so please mute your phones. It just makes it easier to hear the speaker. And then remember to unmute it when it's your turn to speak. Thanks. Because this issue of title, right, or interest is an issue that is not frequently before the board, and we have two newer board members, I'll go over the board's rule about it and outline the procedural options and their consequences. Chapter 2, Section 11D, which Ms. Bertacci mentions in her memo to the board and actually sets forth, says, prior to acceptance of an application as complete for processing, an applicant shall demonstrate to the department's satisfaction sufficient title, right, or interest in all of the property that is proposed for development or use. The regulation lists various ways an applicant can demonstrate sufficient title, right, or interest, such as with a deed, a lease, or an easement. But the list isn't all-inclusive, and a purchase and sale agreement or an option to buy an easement are methods that are often used. Chapter 2 also says that the department may return an application after it's been accepted as complete for processing if the department determines that the applicant did not have or no longer has sufficient title, right, or interest. No application fees or processing fees are refunded to the applicant if it happens. The reason for this requirement is twofold. It is to avoid the department having to waste its time processing an application for a project that could never be built. And then the second reason is to make sure the department could require remediation or cleanup or closure of a project if a project is permitted and built. A determination of absolute proof of ownership, or TRI, is not required by the rules. The rules merely require sufficient showing of TRI to the department's satisfaction. You might note that the rule says the department, and for the newer board members, the definition of the term department does include the board. So the board does have the authority to return an application if it determines that an applicant didn't have or no longer has sufficient title right or interest. The board has three options today, procedurally. First, it can decide to hold an evidentiary hearing on TRI, which would be sort of like the hearing we had before, only just on the title right or interest issues with live witnesses and cross-examination. Second, it could grant the motions and return the applications. Or third, it can deny the motions and continue processing the applications. And I'm going to just talk about what each of those means. As I said, the evidentiary hearing would be focused on title right or interest. There'd be witnesses, cross-examination, exhibits, etc. If the board were to return Nordic's applications, the application process would be over. The applications would no longer be pending. It would not be the equivalent of a denial of the application. Nordic could reapply and start the process over. If Nordic were to return the application, if the board were to return the applications, Nordic could appeal that decision to Superior Court. If the board denies the motion to dismiss, which are essentially motions to return the application, and votes to continue processing the applications, the ultimate decision on those applications would contain a discussion on the issue of TRI and a finding on whether the applicant had demonstrated sufficient TRI for the applications to be processed and a decision to be made on them. If the board votes to continue processing the applications, and if the board's ultimate decision was to approve the applications and issue permits, MGL could appeal that decision to Superior Court based on a claim that the applicant did not demonstrate sufficient TRI. So in either direction, there are appeal rights to appeal a decision to court. If the board decides to continue processing the applications, and I'm trying to anticipate maybe some questions, if the board decides to continue processing the applications and the court where the litigation, the quiet title litigation, is going on, issues a ruling in that litigation on the ownership of the intertidal area being discussed today, while those applications are pending before the board could reopen its record and admit that court decision into evidence with the parties being given an opportunity to comment on it. The court's ruling could definitively address the issue raised by MGL. One last point, if the board were to decide to continue processing the applications and the board were to approve the applications and the court had not ruled yet, but the court subsequently ruled that the Eckrocks have no ownership interest in that intertidal area, then the Eckrocks would not have a basis to sell Nordic an easement across that intertidal area, if that's what the court said. And the issuance of the permits would not give Nordic a property right to the intertidal area. So the board's decisions do not grant or, the board doesn't have the authority to grant property rights, is what I'm trying to say. So that's just the procedural framework. And, suggest that maybe after the parties make their arguments, if you have further questions, maybe hold them until then. Thank you.
Okay. I believe if there's anything else, anyone have any questions before we proceed to Ms. Tucker? Okay. And everyone is muted who can mute while we hear from Ms. Tucker. Is that correct?